Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I'm Boyd Hilton. Psychic Josh is there in Soho House style office. Ricky Lawrence joins us from his mysteriously blurry background location. Where are you, Rick?
You can call me Rick, that's no problem. I'm in my bedroom. I tend to have the blur on to, you know, keep it a little bit.
Yeah, keep the mystery.
Yeah. Exactly, something like that, yeah.
This couldn't be more irrelevant for people listening on audio only. Boyd, how was BAFTA, Boyd?
Very most loud important. There, Joshua, in your anger. BAFTAs were good. I had a good time, thank you. They started... It was quite annoying because... The red carpet was like open when the game started, basically. And then by the time I got into the Royal Festival Hall, where the venue where it was taking place, and into my seat, was basically the last 5 minutes of hell of the game. So as I was walking in, I was like watching it on my iPhone. And I could see that things were getting really tense. I could see like they were having some chances and the goalkeeper was going forward. And then it all cut out because once I got to my seat, there was no coverage. So I had to wait ages and ages for to work out whether we actually managed to win or not in the last and go and see out the last 5 minutes. It was quite stressful. So I kind of wasn't really paying much attention to the awards because I was like, and I was sat right in the middle of a huge row. So I couldn't really easily get out to check. And so it was a bit stressful. But in the end, it's all fine. Oh, and Mark Pugacz was there, of course. Occasional / frequent guest on the Footballistically Arsenal podcast. And he was nominated for, I think, the ITV coverage of the Euros semi-final. Didn't win, sadly. But I bumped into him and we were both like literally like going, can we survive this last 5 minutes as we were entering the venue and trying to get our seats? And he was absolutely, I've never seen Pugac so stressed out. It was fine in the end. You all right, Josh?
I briefly lost some audio connection there, but I'm back.
Oh. I'm not saying that all again. That fascinating anecdote. Okay, through again.
I heard Mark Pugac and then got cut off, Boyd.
Yeah. Oh, well, basically Pugac was there.
Yes.
Was saying, you know, can Arsenal survive these last 5 minutes? We're both very stressed out about it. And then it took a long time to work out whether we'd done it. And it was fine in the end. You were there, of course. You, Josh, were there with royalty, effectively. I mean,
I've got to tell you. Yeah. There's very little new things you do related to Arsenal at the age of 35. But yeah, I had the tremendous honour and privilege, and I really mean that, of going in the director's box for the game. It was really special. And, you know, I felt very fortunate to do it. I was there with my uncle, Lord Robert Winston, and a friend of his as guest of the club. And it is everything you could hope for in there. And it couldn't think of a nicer way to go and watch Arsenal. Frankly, going back to block 12 for the Everton game in a couple of weeks' time will be a major step down. At least for you, boy, you'd only be going from, you know, directors club to club level. I've got to go the whole way down, where there certainly won't
like going
be.
Going from first class on a flight to economy, I suppose.
Yeah, economy and kind of near the toilets, possibly. You could argue I am in the back corner, but I like it there. I feel I'm...
Basic, as they call it on Virgin Atlantic, I believe.
Oh, I'm surprised you know, Boyd. I'm so surprised you know. You just like to know what the options are, not that you'd ever do it. But it was amazing. Like, a wonderful buffet. You know, all the, you know, incredible, impeccable service. Arsenal people and legends and, senior people of the club.
They had the 71 team, didn't they?
Yes, they weren't in there. They weren't in there. Where David O'Leary would have been, was in there.
Right.
Per Mertesacker was in there. Edu, of course, was in there. I did have a bit of chat with Paul Davis. He was in there, actually. Him and Tom Watt, because you know Tom Watt. So they were in there. And, I spoke briefly to Vinay, of course, from the Arsenal hierarchy, who was very lovely and friendly. And... you know, you didn't have to go and queue for a drink at halftime. It was there waiting for you on your table. Lovely coffee, a bit of champagne. I had plenty of champagne.
Wow. I mean, I was joking, but fair enough.
No, there was champagne on arrival. It was really like amazing, and I was sort of very relieved that Arsenal
Did Lord Robert Winston enjoy himself?
Yeah, he most certainly did. Yeah. It was, yes, Rick.
I have a question. But David O'Leary, is he at Arsenal in official capacity?
Yeah, he does have a full-time role, I believe. Yeah. I believe that is the case. And obviously, he has huge connections to Leeds. There was a funny moment where I saw David Seaman just from above, actually, and he had a half-half scarf. And he was saying that is the only game that he would feel he could get a half-half scarf, given his mix of allegiances to Leeds and Arsenal.
I guess if you've played for two teams, then a half-and-half scarf is fine. But any normal fan to have a half-and-half scarf is a different matter of idiocy, isn't it? I think if you played for some bad teams, that's good.
One thing I didn't know about Director's Box, there are heat warmers on the seats in there, should you want them. Obviously, it was a lovely day, but I didn't even try. But it was nice to know I had the option, should I have got a little bit cold during the game.
You can't have Lord Robert Winston with a cold posterior. I mean, that is not. I really hope his son isn't listening to this podcast this week. But yes, you know, of course, they have to look after everyone. Yeah, there must have been. I watched the game back slightly on. I was like fast forwarded some bits of it. I watched it back last night when I got back from the BAFTAs about 1 a.m. And I saw David O'Leary. They showed David O'Leary a couple of times. So you must be. I'm going to have rewind and see if you're there in vision fully.
I got to tell you, I was on the seat at the most periphery of the. I was seat one, and it's 1 to 20 across the director's box. So, fine. I mean, it was a strange one because you've got people obviously in club level, a mere 2 feet away from you, really, who are, you know, extremely close. I definitely suspect people paying the amount of money that club level ticket costs there are not riffraff. Did you see the article today? Is it the Mail Online, Boyd? Showing shock at the price of some chips at Arsenal. Have you seen this story? It was on the Mail Online. I'm surprised. Daily Mail Online. The headline of the article is... Does the price include match ticket and a lift home? Fans blast Arsenal for charging nearly £13 a portion of chips at Emirates Stadium amid cost of living crisis.
Is that factually correct?
I can't remember ever buying any item of food or drink at the Emirates Stadium. Josh is holding it up. Looks interesting.
Wait a minute. They're not just chips. They're chips with some kind of... topping.
They are the £12.60 Gunners chili cheese fries.
Oh, okay.
Unsurprising.
Hang on. Misleading mail here.
The Mail. I can't believe that you know that publication is being misleading as they try and fucking stitch up former footballist of the Arsenal guest Keir Starmer as we speak. Carry on.
which came topped with spring onions, a few tiny pieces of meat, and cheese sauce.
Meat as well. What do these people expect?
Yeah.
Of course it's going to be expensive, but I may have got this wrong, but I'm sure friend of the podcast, as I'm sure you would call him, Boyd, Alan Alger tweeted that he had a pizza and water for £20. I'm going to have
to... Oh, I missed that.
He did. £21 he claimed his pizza and water. Yeah.
Have they just put the prices up, like literally now? Is that... Because to be honest, it's quite a long time since I tried to go for the brick thick veggie burger and chips option, which was about 13 quid. That was about 12.50, 13.50 anyway, like, you know, last season. So the prices are ridiculous, but it sounds like they have gratuitously put them up just to make some more money from what's the name of the company, the catering company?
Delaware North. You never remember it. You must.
I know. I am a senile old man. Let's not forget. So, but yeah, never remember Delaware. There's certain names that I do always forget. You're right. And Delaware North is certainly one of them.
Anyway, I will just we'll move on before people. Yes. Turn off yes. thinking Rick, that Rick, we are
Rick, were you there interested. At the game?
I actually at one point I was gonna have Josh's ticket in the previous mentioned block 12, but I didn't think I could go originally, so I didn't, and then I tried and I couldn't get a ticket. I was trying for the whole week and just couldn't get a ticket. So the short answer is no, unfortunately no.
I've got to say I feel demand is at its biggest for a decade. It feels like I also had a number of people saying, like, anyone got spares in various WhatsApp groups I'm in, who's got spares? You know, it's a sign of the times that, you know, obviously the games are important, but there is such demand now. And, you know, even Ticket Exchange, which used to be flooded every single game with many tickets in all parts of the stadium that, you know, people could buy. There's like nothing on there coming up to these games. So, yeah, I'm sure the club, at least from that side, are doing well.
Yeah, I felt bad from that point of view that I didn't go. I think, but then I bumped into a lot of, I mean, Dermot obviously didn't go. Dermot actually won a BAFTA yesterday, so he made the right decision to go to the BAFTAs rather than go to the match, and he had a fantastic time. And but you know who also won a BAFTA that chose to go to Arsenal rather than the BAFTAs? Here's a quiz question for you: which TV personality made that decision and ended up winning, but he wasn't there to pick it up? And they explained, his colleagues on this show said, he's gone to the football.
This is a great question. Do we get a clue?
Well, one of the clues is that it was his colleagues, his on-screen colleagues. So he's got more than one. It's like a gang of people on this show. That's a clue. And it's one of my favourite shows on TV. That's the other clue.
Well, I can't keep up. You watch more TV in like a single evening than I do across a month. I've got no idea.
Okay. Ricky?
Well, I've now brought up the list of... I'm assuming that Matthew McFadden isn't a... big Arsenal.
No, and he wasn't there, but no, he was.
I know It's a Sin didn't win, did it?
No.
I mean, no.
The Callum
Mo Gilligan?
No, Mo is an Arsenal fan, but he was there. Callum is Welsh, but he's a kind of honorary Arsenal fan. He's been to Arsenal the last few games, I've noticed. I'll tell you, I'll relieve the tension and the boredom. It's Bradley Walsh.
Oh, of course.
The Chase. The Chase won Best Daytime Show, quite rightly, because it is brilliant. And Bradley chose to go to Arsenal, thinking, I think they said that they all just assumed they wouldn't win. So, but good on him. That's all I say. Anyway, we should, I guess, address the key issues of the game. First of all, like, I mean, obviously, the start. So I was listening to watching the game, listening on my headphones, and I said to a friend of mine who was also there as an Arsenal fan, like, you know, if we score early, then I'm confident everything will be fine. He was like famous last words. But I was nearly the case. We scored early, gifted that goal, scored another goal. Eddie, absolutely fantastic second goal. Nice build-up, excellent finish. And then it all went weird with the sending off. How was it there? Were you... You know, you must have felt, this is going to be fantastic. Once it's got 2-0 up and the sending off, it's going to be like a, you know, 5-6-0.
100%. We're busy trying to work out how many goals behind Spurs were and thinking how could goal difference play a role in the battle for fourth spot and how we could, you know, be closing it down very, very quickly. But yeah, it wasn't to be. It was, I totally couldn't foresee that there was going to be any stress towards the end of the game once they were sort of down to 10 men. We were just totally, totally dominant. Just felt you were just looking at sort of the Arsenal attacking side of the pitch. It took me a few minutes to remember why Eddie did his kind of apologetic scoring hand thing. Remembered that he'd obviously been at Leeds, but I couldn't work it out.
Yeah.
Couldn't work out why he wasn't really celebrating quite hard. But it was a massive job. But Arsenal were brilliant for that first period of the game, like absolutely outstanding. And I don't know, there is something in these playing against 10 men and it becomes harder. And, you know, maybe Leeds at that point became... Leeds did exactly what you could have asked them to do, stay in the game and give themselves any kind of chance of grabbing a point at the death. So maybe give a bit more credit to
Ricky, the aforementioned Alan Alger tweeted this: our wins telling us far more about the weaknesses of our team and manager than our defeats at the moment. Inexplicably bad after that Leeds red, when the chance of making ground on the goal difference column was there for the taking, need to be 10 times better on Thursday.
Difficult to disagree. The goal difference, I guess, I haven't worked out the permutations of when, how it will come into play. I'm sure it's not that difficult. But if we beat Spurs on Thursday, obviously the goal difference is irrelevant anyway. But yeah, I think that in recent games, I think Man United, who I've said for ages they're useless, I think they actually were probably better than us on the day. And I think we got a bit lucky with some of the decisions. West Ham, I don't think played well, but we were poor as well. I think we were really poor against West Ham, but just about managed to hang in there. And against Leeds, yes, I think I messaged to say in the first half, I couldn't recall a team being as bad as Leeds were yesterday. I know obviously went down to 10 men, but that was only with about 15 or so minutes left of the first half. They were absolutely awful. They didn't barely get out of our half, or their half even. And to let them back into it is... I mean, I know at the end of the day, 3 points, it doesn't matter. But for every fan, I actually listened to the Athletic Arsenal podcast earlier. It was James McNicholas saying that he actually left his seat and was walking around the concourse because he couldn't face watching the game. And for that to even have happened is criminal to let him back in. But obviously, at the end of the day, it didn't really matter. But yeah, crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, there was right at the end, there was like a header, wasn't there? Who headed it, Rodrigo headed it on. And that could so easily have gone in. I mean, can imagine that devastating.
Yeah, I do think it was a combination of a few things. One, just not being in fantastic form despite the results. I think most, you know, I guess you put it down to nerves and a bit of complacency. Like the corner that we conceded for their goal, Xhaka air kicks it. And then, I mean, if anything, he blocks the cross, but it's just, you know, it just seemed like we the game should have been out of sight at half time. For us to be holding on for dear life with seconds to go is, you know, even after that, after their free kick, which they nearly headed in, they then put Dan James, not quite through on goal, but Gabriel had to make a sort of, wasn't even an attack, we got fouled in the end, but it just felt just so unnecessary.
Yeah, completely. And the people say about it, like, I've said this before, people say one of the problems with our team is that they're so young and that it's going to happen with young players, that they're going to get nervous. But I think I still think it's the senior players that do this more. Like Cedric, who's what, 30? Cedric is the one who, he gets the ball and, you know, vaguely crosses it, and no one in particular, mystifyingly, he takes free kicks as well. I just think I'd rather have him. I mean, we have to have him at fullback at the moment. I get that. And I think it was interesting, wasn't it, that he picked Tomiyasu and him as the fullbacks, that which must have been to kind of try that out in time for the Spurs game. And Tomiyasu was great, I thought, on the left. But Cedric just is Cedric, isn't he? He just is kind of mediocre, kind of okay. But as an attacking force, I can't stand it when we're in that kind of hectic whirlwind, as we all invariably get in the last few games, in the last 10 minutes or so. And he's there just pumping balls in randomly, not going to anyone, and invariably giving it away.
I think it's more because Cedric's not very good rather than the fact that
he's
experienced. Well, I mean, yeah, but even yesterday, I mean, what we had holding in for Ben White, so that increased our average age somewhat. Obviously, having Nketiah take Lacazette's place in the team has, you know, that's been a drastic change to our average age. But Leeds had 10 men. Leeds are 18th position now. I think inexperienced or not, the game should have been killed off. And yeah. It's one of those where I guess you say, we didn't quite get out of jail, but you just get back into the changes and hope that they'll breathe a big sigh of relief and appreciate the fact that we will have to play better, not just against Spurs, because we can lose 10-0 to Spurs. We're going to have to play, if we do though, we're going to have to play a lot better against Newcastle and Everton to clinch this fourth spot.
It feels like luck is on our side at the moment, Josh, like in a big way. Like we're kind of getting away with a lot, you know. I mean, certainly in these latter stages of matches where we're kind of failing to put games to bed or whatever. And I worry that luck is going to run out and it's going to be horrendous. I mean, and we'll get to what you think is going to happen to Spurs later. But it was a terrifying end to the match, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it was a strange one watching it because obviously this game meant a huge amount to Leeds, even a point, given Leeds' goal difference as well and the fact they're in the bottom three, a point would have been everything to them. And it's again, watching from the director's box and you see there's four or five members of the Leeds executive and board sitting there, they were... You could see the importance of what a goal would have meant to them. In the end... Arteta at the end, did you see? He was giving it massively. He was doing the fist bumps. It wasn't kind of a slightly sheepish, God knows how we've made that so difficult ourselves. It was a proper fist pump and the hugs and, a celebratory kind of a reaction, which I guess is just, one step closer. And look, you have to go back, right, to those three kind of shock defeats, Palace, Brighton, Southampton. Yeah, we've come through 12 points out of 12 since. I mean, that is amazing. Like turnaround from when it looked like it wasn't going to be our control. Now you sort of alluding there that it could still go the other way. Now, I mean, if we end the season with a couple of defeats and maybe even a win on the final day, it won't be enough necessarily. So, yeah, it is all a little bit nervy at the moment. But again, I just sort of found myself looking at this team that we had put out to play the game and just thinking, and this is sort of looking back at the beginning of the season, if you'd have said, we're relying on, Cedric and Ketia and Elneny, who has been a revelation, just that this team is fourth in the massive driving seat to see at home.
Yeah.
Is amazing. I think it is amazing. This is as good as it could ever have been this season. And hey, I mean, we could get third theoretically, right?
Elneny was man of the match, wasn't he?
And the talk of a new contract today, that was David Ornstein's article. Talk of a new contract today,
which is extraordinary. But he has been really good, hasn't he, Rick? He's been like, he's just done, I mean, he's kind of slotted in a not unspectacular way, but he's just done a job. He's just done a really good, effective job, I think.
Yeah, I think that Elneny has done exactly that. I think talk of a new contract baffles is probably a strong word. I don't understand it. I think for me, it's a little bit like there's talk of, for example, like Burnley might stay up with Mike Jackson as their manager, but I think you can get odds of about 9-1 on him to be their next manager, because I guess everyone would realise that if Burnley stayed up, they want to progress and not be fighting, a relegation again next season, or if they can help it. And I see the same as Arsenal. With Arsenal, I think if we can get to the Champions League or not, the answer isn't Elneny. And I appreciate that, his fourth choice, or I guess his third choice now, and we'll need bodies, more bodies, because we'll have Europe. But I don't want to get into Champions League and say, Elneny will reward you with helping us get into Champions League with a new contract. We should say, thanks very much, you helped us get here, but we need to upgrade. I think exactly the same.
Would you say the same about Eddie? Yeah, would you?
100%. I think even like yesterday, he scored a goal that, effectively from running into the goalkeeper. Second was a nice finish, but I think you have to look at the bigger picture. He's been at the club for a really long time, like Elneny, and obviously not, can't compare the two's length at the club, but they've both been there for long enough for a number of managers to decide on whether they were good enough or not. And they're not the only ones, of course, but those two, I think, are the only two or two of the major contract talking points. And I think, if I was in Ketty, I can't imagine he can kid himself to think that he's going to be starting for Arsenal next season, assuming we get rid of both our Lacazette and Nketiah, I think we need three strikers, really. And that has to be a variation of quality and age and, experience. But minimum, even with Nketiah, minimum we need two. And I just can't believe that Nketiah is kidding himself to think that he could be our first choice. Not even second, really. I just don't see why we would want to keep him. The only reason I can imagine we want to keep him is because we get him on a new contract. And if it doesn't work out, at least we can get some money for him. But he should be looking to move on. I think we should be looking to move on from him. And same with Elneny. I know there's, you know, it's difficult to find someone who's going to be happy to sit on the bench, which Elneny has done for the whole season, probably because he's on stupid wages that we paid him. And why would he go anywhere else when he can just get that move at the end of his contract? Same with someone like Jesse Lingard at Man United. He could have left in the summer, I'm sure, but he thought he's probably getting paid a fortune at Man United and will get paid loads more when he leaves on a free transfer, because everyone knows you get more when you leave on a free transfer. So, no, I wouldn't give even them new contracts, because I think especially if we're going to be playing the Champions League, it's not like we can put the league to one side and concentrate on the Champions League, because we're not going to win it. We'd be lucky probably to get out of the last 16, but maybe that's being a bit pessimistic, but maybe it's not. So we have to concentrate on the league, and we need players that can play in the league every single week. And I just don't think, you know, Nenny's what had four good, when was the last time you could say Nenny's had four good games? People used to moan about when Ozil would play well, when his contract was running up, we'd give him a new contract, then he would stop playing well. Well, we're about to do the same thing with Elneny by the sound of things.
Yeah, it is weird. I agree with you. It's crazy, yeah. I mean, I think, go on, Josh, yeah.
Well, I just wonder with Elneny, I mean, he's only 29, right? Like, another sort of couple of years on presumably not the highest wages, you know, at the club. I suspect, especially if you're starting to think about the fact, well, we've definitely got European football, right? I mean, that much we know next season, yeah. And the squad is desperately short. So I guess they're taking a view on what it would cost to get another version of Elneny into the club, you know, who might well not play a huge amount of games, or certainly start a huge amount of games. I think it's still sort of only 14 in all competitions, you know, this season. So I can sort of see the logic, but I mean, our squad is going to have to, you know, really, you know, flatten out also, in the summer, because you're looking at the fact that, you know, for the last few weeks, there's been a couple of kids on the bench that, you know, have really never played a minute of Premier League football. Never mind Lacazette's going. Never mind Nketiah could well be off. So, you know, it sort of makes sense.
We got knocked out of the FA Cup straight away this year. And we've actually been pretty lucky with injuries, really. Other than Partey, I might be wrong, someone correct me if I am, but Partey, I guess Tierney, Tomiyasu, Partey. But yeah, overall, I feel like maybe I'm wrong. But I do hear that. And I'm talking from a fan perspective who doesn't have to, one, find the player we need to replace Elneny with, and to pay their wages, although. But I just think, like, I like to see someone who you think, okay, maybe he's going to be really good, rather than Elneny, who, well, he's been at the club for, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years, roughly, and no one has ever said, oh, he's a really good player, because he's not.
Yeah, first year was 2015-16, when Elneny...
I agree with everything you've said. I agree with everything you've said, Ricky, about him. You're absolutely right. But do you know what? Some weirdly, I don't really care if they give him a new...
I think he'll stay, because he said he wants to stay. What Josh said. They'll give him a new contract, not high wages, and he'll...
Yeah, and you have to be pragmatic, because let's face it, like, Partey is injury prone, right? I mean, you can't rely on him. You know, he's had long periods of injury every season. And I know he's not been, you know, each season he's been at the club. And, you know, Xhaka, I mean, anything could happen with him, as we know generally. I just think having a body, a decent, solid, sometimes in all squads, I mean, actually even Liverpool, right?
He's like James Milner.
Yeah, James Milner or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I think the fact that he's 29, like, I think, well, he's almost like, what are we going to get out of keeping him, other than someone that, you know, we can play if we're either knocked out of the Champions League in the group stages, or we're getting to Europa League, or we're already through in the Champions League, or the League Cup, and I don't know. I feel like it's just not that exciting, but I do think he'll stay.
Oh, it's definitely not exciting.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I want out of football, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's definitely pragmatic, but I think we have to buy a midfielder anyway.
We have to have a starting midfielder. We have to have, because otherwise, if it's just Xhaka and Partey, you know, they know they're nailed on to start every single week otherwise anyway, which is, yeah, we need a... I think that's our number one, after all, number one striker, obviously, and then it has to be
I agree. Yeah, we'll talk more about the game and all of this, and I want to talk about that song. I want to talk about what's going to happen against Spurs. The new manager's got a new contract. We should talk about that. All after this ad break. And we're back from the break. We should mention that. Well, let's talk about the game. In the game, the sending off. I mean, that fell. The only thing that astonishes me about that, watching it back, was that the referee didn't send him off immediately. It was one of the worst tackles I've ever seen. I think it was absolutely incredible. Am I exaggerating, Josh, a bit?
I think you probably are exaggerating, yes.
Okay.
It was an awful challenge. It was a very unusual challenge in the sense that it was totally absurd in terms of, where he was on the pitch, the game. I'm totally with just the fact that the Leeds fans were in that corner and he wanted to show some fight and that they were 2-0 down and he's,
And Martinelli had tormented him.
Had ripped him. So I think it was just going hard to win the ball. But he got it massively wrong. I mean, his protests were, very limited. He just looked ashamed almost in going off. It was just a terrible one.
Unlike Rafinha, who went absolutely mental.
Yeah.
And does anyone know
but
why?
It was interesting. You know how we talk about if you go to the, the VAR monitor, what's coming. It was really, Jesse March, I was watching him obviously from above, the Leeds manager. It wasn't even waiting. It was like they knew. They knew the second. He was already talking about what subs they're going to do. They were prepared for that 2 minutes while there was uncertainty. He was reorganizing exactly what he was going to do. So it bought him some time. But yeah, but a crazy challenge. But I think you've probably gone overboard. I mean, Martinelli's not out for a year. He was back.
I know,
he
was back, it back could have been.
It was in terms of stupidity and costing your side, it was right up there. I know they were 2-0 down by that point.
I mean,
I got you off the hook there, boy, haven't I? I mean, it was so cowardly. I mean, both physically and it was a bit like Xhaka's tackle at Man City earlier in the season, but actually worse. It was 2-0 down. We're close to being relegated, and I'm off. I'm sure he regrets it massively, but really, really, I think Carragher.
Of course. Carragher said it was disgusting. So it was disgusting.
Yeah.
Repeatedly, and called him an absolute idiot. Yeah. Those are the highlights of the.
Yeah. I think in terms of the ref not giving a red card, I know it's not that important, but I guess. If you're a ref, you can either send him off and then look a fool if you ended up, has to be downgraded. It's much easier to book someone and then say, oh, actually, sorry, mate, but you're actually sent off. And I guess VAR changes the way refs get ref the game, because why wouldn't it?
But I think that's a real flaw. I mean, on the one hand, this is the only good thing about VAR is that it reverses a decision like this when it's. But you have seen decisions where it seems to be a clear red card and they haven't changed it.
Yeah,
I get it. The referee.
It must just be a mental game for the referee. Like, as in, like, how do you, decide what's red and what's yellow when you know you're going to have the fact that you can watch it after? I think probably that Josh mentioned the Leeds fans. Finally, on Match of the Day, you could see some of the Leeds fans are like giving it, yes, scorn, great tackle. And you could see a couple just think, oh, his ass down, straight away, because it was just so obvious.
Yeah. It was so weird on one of the. I was like mesmerized by they had, first of all, Luke Ayling, his face when he committed that foul, the worst foul I've ever seen. I take that back. It's in the top 20. He was like absolutely clear. He knew he was going to be sent off. And then Rafinha going absolutely mad for almost the rest of the half, really. Yeah. In fact, even they showed it had a close up on him at the start of the second half, and the Sky pundits thought he was being substituted, but he wasn't. And they're all, oh, yeah, it's coming off. And then it's, oh, no, he's not. Because he even looked furious then. He's still furious. Yeah. At the start of the second.
Adam Smith was convinced he was going to be sent off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he should have been, really. He stalked the referee. He was absolutely, literally, like, running up to the referee and stalking him. And the other one, that Melier, that goalkeeper, he was mortified, for 20, 25 minutes. And he kept shaking his head. I mean, he looks about 8 years old, Melier. I don't know how old he is. He looked like basically like an 8-year-old who'd like pissed his pants or something and was like embarrassed. And I've never seen the like.
22. But that is young for a Premier League goalkeeper. And obviously, he's his second year of being a Premier League goalkeeper. So... I think it definitely affected. I mean, Leeds as a whole looked ragged, completely ragged at the start of the game. It was yeah, extraordinarily, you know, straightforward for Arsenal. But, you know, I guess credit to them for the way that they turned it around. We've got to talk about, I know neither of you were there. We mentioned the anthem, last week. Yeah.
Is it already being referred to as the anthem?
The anthem by Lewis Dunford. I got a few messages suggesting that perhaps certainly Gareth, I don't think, was wild on it. I was a bit surprised, I've got to admit, that the club engaged it just because of the lyrics being so, the lyrics of the rest of the song being a little bit possibly 18 plus, but it didn't really occur to me that they could get a much sort of cleaner version done and therefore it could be played. And I think I'm right in saying that's kind of what's happened. And I got to tell you, I don't know what you thought about the videos, and I know there'd be mixed opinion. I can see there's mixed opinion online about it, but it did create a good noise at Arsenal, and people who hadn't presumably been aware or been on social media looking around and thinking, you know, it was almost, you know, relatively impressive start to the game. And also they played it at the end. Have you seen any of the clips back, Boyd?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, we got a message from Princess Guna telling us off, quite rightly saying, just listening to your pod, I just wanted to correct you on one thing. The potential Arsenal anthem, it's not officially called the Arsenal anthem, it's just a potential Arsenal anthem, was not put out there by Louis Dunford himself, but Guna, who lives in North London. I personally love it and can't wait to sing it. And it did, as you say, it did get the crowd roused up, didn't it? Which is, and Arteta said, you know, he'd heard about it and, you know, he sanctioned the whole thing clearly.
Well, they had him down at the training ground, I could see. Louis Dunford was down at the training ground. And then, of course, at the game on Sunday. It'd be interesting to see if it sort of catches on. You assume it will be played at the final game of the season against Everton as well?
I think that's the new...
The wonder of you. Have we lost the wonder of you? Is that what's gone?
We lost that long time. I was always of the opinion that why can't we just play good old Arsenal? And I actually, I listened to last week's pod, and when Gareth was talking about the song of the season, I thought he was referring to the Saka and Smith Rowe song. Until he said the Mikel Arteta one, I think the Saka and Smith Rowe song was the best. And actually, I loved it. The United game. When, as soon as the final whistle went, that's where the whole crowd was singing. That's much more fun. I'd say, to be honest, I was a bit of a naysayer to, what is it called, The Angel, this new song. I was a bit of a naysayer when I heard it going around on Twitter. And actually, a few people behind me at West Ham were trying to sing it, and it didn't catch on. But I think it's impossible to start a song at that ground. But I'm neither here nor there. I mean, like I said, I haven't been to the ground since we started singing it. But if it catches on, great. But it seems like not a song for after the game. If you win, it's a bit more, I don't know.
They played it during when the warm-up, didn't they? And I think that's, like to get the crowd going before the game. I think it's fair enough, But I like Emile Smith-Rowe, Saka and Smith-Rowe as well. Fair. Clearly, we're both Zayas Grove fans. That's the issue there, because obviously it's
more of that song, but yeah. I had a karaoke night on Saturday, and actually that song we did have on, so... Yeah,
you sang the original.
And actually, funny enough, I sang it with some Spurs fans, but obviously, you know,
wow,
I changed the words.
Wow,
Leighton Orient run out to that song. Did you know that, Boyd?
Yeah. Do they? The Satan's the Crow song.
Yeah, that's where Leighton Orient run out of Brisbane Road, rocking all over the world. So, you know, if you go down to Brisbane Road, you can hear that too. My gut now is with this this song. I think it's going to stick. I can see this sticking for a while. I think it seems to have got enough of a reaction and traction and momentum. It's quite interesting to show what you can do online. You know, someone with a couple of thousand followers who's, you know, just had it. And I agree probably with what the message said about an element of organic desire to see something through. And I think part of it, and this isn't doing the song a disservice, I think part of it is almost just fans wanting an anthem, and then this, for whatever circumstance and timing, has perhaps begun it, and you know, presumably will stick now. So it'd be interesting. Yeah, be interesting to see if it carries at the away games, or whether it's more of an
Emirates. What did you say, Ricky?
I said it's come at the perfect time. Like, you know, win three games in a row, be what, a few points away from top four, and I agree with, you know, hear and read lots of stuff about how this is the most united Arsenal fans have been for a long time, which I 100% agree. So it's all the perfect storm, if you like.
Go on, sorry.
No, that was actually one of the things I was speaking with Paul Davis after the after the game, and he was sort of reflecting that it was the sort of loudest and most positive sort of environment he can remember in recent years at the club. That's what we were discussing, and there's simply no question that it is. And it's interesting, again, not to harp on, but being upstairs, you get a better sense of, in the middle of a stadium, you actually get a better sense of the atmosphere. When I'm away in my corner, I can kind of feel if my corner's noisy. But actually, when you're sat in the middle of the upper tier, right, front, you really get a sense. And it was loud, a really sort of strong atmosphere. And, well, hopefully one more home game where it, hopefully will already have been a celebration and won't need to be a celebration on the day. But we'll get on to that.
Mm.
Well,
Alan Alger liked it. Alan said he thought it was brilliant, well done. Maybe get the words on the screen for a few matches while it beds in. Then job done, said Alan. Alan's a miserable old bastard at the best of times.
Pragmatic. Pragmatic from Alan.
Yeah.
Very pragmatic. Ricky, you're going to Spurs Thursday?
I am. I said I've had my ticket. I actually, my 4-year-old daughter picked up the ticket today. She knows, she's been indoctrinated. She knows to hate Spurs. So she sees the club crest and she... she tells me how Spurs are discussed, and she saw it today. And I said, "No, be careful. I need that." My wife said, "But it says January the 16th on here." And I said, "Yeah, exactly. It's the same game." So I've had my ticket on the window ledge, gathering dust for quite a while now. As Josh flags his at mine.
Josh is shaking his ticket. I thought you meant when you said your 4-year-old daughter picked it up. I thought you meant you sent her to the Tottenham Stadium to pick it up.
No. Oh, I see.
It's like horrific. Don't send her in there. I mean, that's like the worst place on earth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's quite away from any game, let alone going to Spurs away. So, I will be there. I've been saying it for a few, well, I guess since we probably beat United, I'm not sure, is to be able to go there and lose 10-0 and it have no negative effects. So we can go there, they can be delighted, they can beat us 10-0, and then we can beat Newcastle and Everton, and that's fine. If you give me that, I'll bite your hand off now if you give me that. So, I mean... obviously losing 10-0 to Spurs wouldn't be nice, but if it meant we were guaranteed top four, I'd take it.
I get the intention of what you mean, but it would be much better to just win on Thursday. It won't be
for sure
quite 2004 and winning the league at their place in terms of celebration. But my God, keep us behind for as long as you want if we've gone and secured fourth spot at their place on Thursday night.
I think it would be too pleasurable for that to happen. I can't quite conceive, because the stress, even though I think we have been lucky, it's been unbelievably stressful. Like the last, three games, maybe more, in terms of holding on to wins and getting just about getting there in the end, these like fine margin victories that we've had. And to then go to Spurs and win and guarantee top four at their place, it's just too... I can't quite conceive that that's actually going to happen. So I completely take on board what you say, Ricky, that, it doesn't matter. We've got 4-point buffer. Could have been 5 points. Liverpool fucked that up totally. Can't believe it. I mean, yeah. I'm fascinated, by the way, on how Spurs are going to set up. Are they going to play that way against us? Are they going to kind of invite us on? Anyway, we'll see. But it's just too... I don't know. I feel like there's a horrible twist. There's a horrible twist of the knife still to come. So if we lose that game, you're guaranteed two more stressful, nightmare stressful weeks of this fucking hell. I'm not sure if I can take it anymore.
That's a good point.
Look, if we lose, we're going to need two wins to sort of keep it in our own hands. And given the games they've got, you would assume we might well need 6 points. And going to Newcastle on the back of a Thursday night defeat at White Hart Lane would be not the most appealing of things to go. We're sitting here happy and laughing at the table. It could go horrifically wrong within the space of 4 days as of Thursday.
Only we didn't have that one player with a COVID positive test, right?
Yeah, exactly. Ruined the whole fucking thing, yeah. I mean, Sky must be so thrilled that we had that one player with a COVID test.
Yeah, Sky had this up their sleeve from the minute that game was called off.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's an interesting game for everyone. You're neutrals, I think this is one of the most interesting North London derbies in years and years and years. And Yeah, and also that it's the first time, you know, Arsenal will have fans in their new stadium. That's also an added element of it. So, yeah. Boyd, what are your plans for Thursday night?
I'm going to lock myself in my room. Maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe with some alcohol and...
you and Bradley Walsh, are you getting together?
Brad's coming around, yeah.
Yeah, Bradley Walsh, yeah.
The rest of the Chasers. Now I think I'm just going to be on my own in a grueling, tense, stressful nightmare. Yeah, because, yeah, I can't bear it. But having said that, if we do win, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be peak, beyond our wildest dreams, isn't it, really? I'd say I'm fascinated. What are Spurs going to do? Because the way they set out, a lot of people, like LaGrove is constantly saying, you know, we all overestimate Conte's, you know, genius and blah, blah, blah. But I think when you watch that Liverpool game, and I watched it with my best mate who's a Liverpool fan, I mean, they did do that job pretty brilliantly, Spurs, in that game. I mean, it's kind of, you know, considering what a machine Liverpool are. So I wonder if they kind of go for the same tactic. But of course, we quite like to play that way as well. You know, we quite like, you know, attacking on the break, etc. So it's going to be fascinating, isn't it?
I think the most important thing is that against Liverpool, whichever way you slice it, and the fact that Liverpool obviously needs to win, so does Spurs. You know, Spurs fans, they can say it was a great performance, etc., etc. But 1 point didn't really achieve the whole deal.
Yeah.
So they have to win on Thursday. And we're in the advantage that not only can we not lose, not only can we lose and it'd be all right, but a draw is almost like a win, almost, where it, you know, we'll still be 4 points ahead with 2 games to go. Like, that would just be huge. So, I'm not saying we'll just sit back and wait for them to attack us, but that doesn't really necessarily play to Spurs' favour. And maybe it plays into our hands a bit, but I think Spurs, they've got some just brilliant players. Harry Kane is just, you know, another level. So,
well, Son is like unbelievable.
He is, of course. And Kulusevski's scored a lot of goals, and you know, Romero's brilliant. But I think they're a better side than what the league position shows, unfortunately. But, well, maybe fortunately. But I think it'll be a really, really hard game. And that's why I'm so got that, you know, that soft, that cushion of the fact that we can lose and it be.
You're right. That relieves the stress a bit. It does, of course. The other, do you know what? The other thing I really do admire Arteta for, and I've had, you know, we all know we've all had our ups and downs with him, but I thought that, as I mentioned before, picking Tomiyasu on the left, because I was fucking up. That was the one thing I was most scared about, is what we're going to do with our fullbacks, you know, against their attack, their extraordinary attack. And I think Tomiyasu was great in that role, and I think he'll definitely play him on that side again, you know, and hopefully dealing with Son, at least to some extent, at least to the any extent that you can.
Son's normally on the left with Kulusevski on the right, but he's scored and created a lot of goals. But even on Sunday, like, Rafinha is a very, very good player, and the thought of Rafinha against Tavares would have been...
Right, you know, exactly. Been game. It's basically Tavares anything but Nuno.
Yeah, exactly. No, anything course, but Nuno. He can't go on the pitch. I've heard some suggestions of maybe playing Ben White right back, and Tomiyasu at left back, which I've been holding a centre back, which I'd probably be okay with.
Is Ben White even fit? He wasn't even on the bench, was he?
No, he wasn't, but Arteta has said that he thinks he'll be back. We could even go to five at the back with maybe Tomiyasu on one side and Saka maybe as a wing back. I would rather we didn't play Cedric or Tavares, to be honest. Well, definitely not Tavares, unfortunately.
Definitely not Tavares. Yeah, I agree with that.
Really
Cedric.
Yeah, Cedric. Right. So, yeah, I mean, if we have to sacrifice an attacking element, i.e. in Saka, and, you know, stifle Spurs a bit more, then that's probably fine in the position that we're in. If we had to go and win, then it's a whole different ballgame. But we don't. So about getting nervous just talking about it.
It's a whole stress. I can't think of anything else. We should mention the before we go to full official predictions, we should mention Arteta getting a new contract. Happy with that, Josh?
I think you have to applaud the job that has been done this season, right? Like, we have to remember where the expectation was. We've had a couple of years of being eighth. We are at least in Europe again next season, and it's in the absolute palm of our hands to make sure that's back on the Champions League. If you'd have said back in August, you know, forget even the losing the first three games of the season. You would have said back in August, Arsenal are going to be back in the Champions League. I think that probably is reasons for, you know, an extension. I think that is a really impressive return on this season beyond what would have sort of been the vast majority's expectations. So, yeah, it was a bit interesting, the sort of timing of it, and Arteta sort of come out and mentioned that he, you know, was told even, you know, three defeats wasn't going to, you know, of course, change anything that we had recently. It was, you know, the deal was there and on the table for him. So, yeah,
Well, he said they offered it to him after the three defeats.
Yeah, he said the three defeats didn't change anything. That he was, you know, but I'm sure it wouldn't come out the blue. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure he didn't go in straight after, and it was like, oh, we hadn't discussed this, guys. So what I mean is, obviously, this, you know, it's ongoing and didn't change from the three defeats, which does show how highly that they regard him. And I mean, it goes on to the stability of the club, right? And we need that.
Yeah,
you know, we lost that after sort of Wenger sort of going, and it's a sign of a sort of healthy, steady club. And you have to say that Arteta has been backed in the decisions that he wanted to make, whether that was players leaving the club, you know, be that the, you know, types of Guendouzi, you know, or obviously more recently, Aubameyang, he's been backed. And that is just a sign of that continued faith. So, yeah, I'm pleased. What about you, Boyd?
Yeah. Yeah, same. I mean, I think it makes sense. You know, I think it what is remarkable really, though, is that there was no one really was that bothered. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think everyone thought it was a fairly sensible thing to do. Whereas, like, a few months ago, I think it would have been very controversial to you know, to give him a new contract. But it almost went by without barely, like, anyone even, you know, like, disagreeing with the whole other thing. Even the most staunch Arteta kind of doubters, and there are still some I see out there, In social media, were like, fine, give him your contract, kind of makes sense at the moment.
Stability. I think also, you know, with players, it's different. If you sign a player up to a 5-year contract, you know that they're staying unless you're going to get a big money offer. With this, with a manager, if we lose the first 10 games of next season, he's sacked. It just means we'll have to pay him more money. I think manager's contract, like, you think, who is, like, Klopp was, like, I guess, a bigger deal because he's Liverpool's greatest manager since, you know, such a long time. Guardiola sort of, I know he doesn't go on rolling contracts, but he lets his contracts come towards the end, and, you know, you never quite know. With other managers, like, who's the next manager? You think, oh my God, he signed a new contract. It's unbelievable. Like, if the only difference is, like I said, is that we have to pay him more if we decide to get rid of him. I do think the timing was strange because it has set ourselves, if Leeds would have scored an equaliser on Sunday and, you know, we lose to Spurs, and they pip us to fourth, we look a bit foolish for the timing of saying, oh, look, you know, Arteta's here to stay or for a while. The jury's still out for me. But I wasn't, like, fuming that we gave him a new contract. I think it sort of made sense. The timing didn't really. But maybe Arsenal were concerned that, you know, we need to time down, maybe give him more money, because otherwise maybe he's going to be starting looking elsewhere. It doesn't take long for a good job to come up and, you know. So,
and I think they thought, I agree with you at the time, I think maybe they thought, you know, it's a boost for the team, just to keep the togetherness of the squad and, you know, give them a kind of, you know, they all seem to like him. You know.
Josh is, I really agree with Josh that, you know, we have backed him in every position, you know, Ozil, Aubameyang, Guendouzi, and just getting rid of players that he obviously wanted out. They've gone, they've listened to everything Arteta's said. Really. My concern is just, like I said, the top performances, you know, scraping past Leeds, you know, limping home against West Ham in between their semi-finals. But the thing is, you take United out of the league this season because they've just been so bad. Someone had to fill that fourth spot. I really hope it's us. I hope Arteta goes on to prove me massively wrong. But I think just finishing fourth, in my opinion, doesn't, you know, make me think, okay, he's definitely the man to be the manager, but it's obviously not, you know, you're not going to get rid of him on the back of that. So,
excuse me. The time has come to consider the Spurs result. What do we think is going to happen, Josh?
So tough, isn't it? But I mean, in these recent fixtures where, you know, we probably had slightly lower expectations, and most recently a trip to Chelsea to, you know, that really surprised us and got us back on track for this top four race. We really dug it out. I think we'll draw, which I think we'd all have to really take at this situation, leaving us basically needing one win from those final two games to be guaranteed. So I think this will be 1-1. But I fear we will do well. I think we will do well and get a 1-1 draw, and leaves us heading to Newcastle to try and wrap it up there.
Interesting. Ricky?
Yeah, I would never predict us to do anything but win. I'm not confident in the slightest, and I feel like it could be what I described before about losing and, you know, going on to have two, like you said, Boyd, horrible, horrible games against Newcastle and Everton, hopefully with wins. But I was still putting a 2-1 prediction of a victory to Arsenal. So, yeah, you know.
Boyd, you backing Spurs? Yeah.
No, I can't. I mean, I am tempted to go for the old, you know, bet on a Spurs victory, and that way at least you get some kind of money out of it if the worst comes to the worst. But I was going to predict 2-2. I was going to predict a draw. I think I genuinely think it will be a draw. I just feel like we're quite closely matched in a way, like both kind of similar flaws, like similar kind of mental weaknesses. We're both similar, like we both had games where, like, in our three defeat run, and in there they had a little run, didn't they, where they could barely like get a shot on target even with that attacking lineup. But we're both perfectly capable of being terrible and being completely kind of like ground down by the opposition, and I wonder whether we might cancel each other out, and it might be a really boring game. I predicted 2-1, which wouldn't be boring, but it could equally be, you know, quite excruciating. So, but yeah, I think a draw and I'll go 2-2, but we'll see. Exciting times. And then we've got Monday Night Football after that. So I don't know when we record our next podcast. Maybe
I mean, Sunday night. If we win, we're definitely doing a podcast. So we'll have to deal with that as we go. Because, yeah, Monday night. I mean, at the moment, I mentioned on the last podcast, I've booked, got a hotel reserved, got the train to go up. But I'm really hoping not to go, in the sense that if it's done, I'm not going to Newcastle. So we will see. We will see.
Well, stay safe at the what's it called? The stadium, the Spurs Stadium,
Stadium.
Yeah, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. You get those, like, you know, filling up pints from the, you know, beer from the thing, whatever it is they have in that bar. You could go there.
Not giving them our money, boys. That'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't buy a drink.
Giving Harry Kane's wages.
Yeah, that's true. Take some. I want to see, check how much their chips are. And we'll get a comparison.
They're probably not £13 or £12.60.
Maybe not.
I'll let you know, Boyd.
Thank you. That's the important thing. That's the title of this podcast. Check how much the chips are. See you, hopefully, after a glorious, unparalleled glory of a victory at White Hart Lane, sending us into the Champions League. We can but only dream. See you later. Bye.
Cheers, guys.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.